This is Love Your Work. On this show, we help you make it as a creative entrepreneur. Find your unique voice, find the right mindset to succeed, and be the first to capitalize on new opportunities to make a living making your art. I'm David Cadavy. If you want to join us here on Love Your Work every Thursday, please hit subscribe on your podcast app. And to get your free creative productivity toolkit, sign up at cadavy.net/tools. David Allen has built a legacy. He's created a system that helps millions of people get more of what they want out of life. Getting Things Done, the book, has sold millions of copies, and there is an entire cottage industry of GTD apps and consultants all over the world. Even if you've never read or heard of GTD, you or someone you work with probably operates with next actions and context and other GTD concepts. David and I talked more about the GTD system back in his first appearance on the show on episode 85. This time, we'll be talking about David's accidental legacy. How does somebody create something that spreads like wildfire and changes the culture? Today, we'll talk about your day-to-day actions are guided by meaning on various levels. How can you think about the different levels of what's meaningful to you? And how can you think about what actions you need to take to make those things happen? And why does David's screensaver just say, let go? Following a system like GTD may feel like it's for control freaks, but learn the difference between being in control and being under control. And what was the one email David got that made him decide that GTD was ready to scale globally? Here's David Allen. I'm here with David Allen again. And David, when we talked about setting up this conversation, you were saying that you're planning this event, which we'll get to the event. But the thing that stuck out to me was you were saying, oh, it's a sort of a grand finale of your career. So what do you mean by that?
Gee, David, I've been doing this work for 35 years in some various shapes and forms. And, you know, at 73, I figure, you know, there's probably not a whole lot more things that I really want or need to do now that we've sort of implanted this methodology out there in the world. And it's become a bit of a global phenomenon. So, you know, my work now is really, I don't think I'll ever retire because I can't stop doing this stuff in terms of what I'm doing. But, you know, sort of as a grand finale to bring, you know, a whole lot of our global network together, you know, these just incredible network of people that have been attracted to GTD and this methodology. And it kind of reinforce the brand and say, guys, the train has left the station and, you know, it's going to affect the world for the next, you know, hundreds of years, ideally. So it was really just a version of that. You know, we did a summit 10 years ago in San Francisco, and it was such a unique event and so cool. You know, we had some very smart people say, don't do this again because this was so unique. And so I didn't do it again. So what's coming up is now that, you know, in the last 10 years, this has become, as I mentioned, a pretty much a global phenomenon. We have partners now around the world that are doing the marketing and distribution and delivery of this methodology through trainings and coachings that we've certified. So I said, you know, probably time to do something like that. And, you know, where two or more gathered, really cool things show up. So again, it's not going to be some sort of regular recurring event. This is probably the last of any such things I will do. Somebody else might pick up the ball and do it later. I don't know. But that's kind of why I called it the grand finale.
And when you say the global network, can you give us a rundown of kind of who that consists of?
Well, officially, we actually have licensees who've been certified to deliver GTD trainings in 60 countries. And, you know, a lot of those are just tiny countries or just small little things. And some of these are very, very small startup, you know, consulting or training companies that we've licensed to now deliver this. So, but we, you know, right now, given the fact that we've added on a U.S. partner, Vital Smarts, great folks. And so, you know, all those combined, we're now training 3,000 plus people a month through, you know, around the world through this methodology. And, you know, it's not only affecting all of those people, but it affects all those people and their intersections with all those people they're intersected with, because it kind of moves up the food chain in terms of how people are engaging with their life and their commitments and their work and their life. So So it has taken off, in a sense, a life of its own. I think I'm still kind of the banner holder of this thing that I need to stick around and say, hey guys, you know, it really works and we can model it. And we've got some of the best and brightest and busiest people on the planet that are champions of it.
So help me understand the structure of this, I guess, organization or this network. Is that like, if I want to be a consultant, a GTD consultant, I can like take a training and then pay a licensing fee and then train other people on that? Is that how that works?
It was. Now that we've got exclusive licensees in all of these different regions, you would have to then engage with those licensees to then create whatever your relationship with them was. So, you know, that's the last 5 years we've developed that network. And, you know, we've partnered with some really good folks that are really good at that process of finding the right licensees and then creating the business structure and the legal structure and so forth to make all that work. So, and you know, one of the reasons to do this was GTD was this sort of brand that ran out from under us. You know, that was just our shorthand for the book. We did never invested in branding or marketing or any of that stuff. And it just kind of, you know, after the book sort of took off and was translated around the world, all kinds of people said, hey, I can do this. They read the book. They go, well, that's pretty simple. So now I'm going to be a GTD consultant. So there was a whole lot of pirating done, not necessarily bad intentions, but, you know, and I wrote the book. That makes it, in a sense, the methodology itself is open source. You know, so anybody can read it, find out what they want, learn what they want, do it, and then do whatever they're doing. But the main thing was to protect the brand and protect the quality of what the methodology itself was. So, you know, it's been a long process for us over the last 5, 6, 7 years to try to figure out how do we both protect the brand, protect the value and the quality of the methodology itself, and still, you know, let people experience this however they want.
That was something I was wondering about when you say that the brand kind of ran out from under you, because my first contact with GTD was not through you at all. It was through a blog that you might remember called 43 Folders.
Sure.
By Merlin Mann.
Yeah.
And he was just going nuts with that. The blog was called 43 Folders, based upon the 43 Folders. I believe that's an original GTD phenomenon. And then he was just blogging about it all the time and was just obsessed with it. And it seemed like there were all these other people who were obsessed with it.
Yeah. Well, so, it was pretty much the foundation of the life hack movement, really. And that sort of became the sort of meme that spread certainly through the tech world.
Yeah. And so when that was happening, what was your reaction to that?
Well, I was flattered. Come on, imitation is the biggest form of flattery. So I was like, hey, well, that's nice that they think this is cool and that's great. And it started to spread around. I just didn't know how to package that. I didn't know how to grab a hold of that. I didn't know how to make this, you know, a global event. It was bigger gum than I knew how to chew. So we were just kind of scratching our heads going, well, what do we do with this now that it's become so popular and becoming such a popular thing? And how do we, you know, make sure? And, you know, I've never been that aspirational or entrepreneurial myself. You know, money was not my biggest driver, or building this, you know, building some big empire was not, it's still not my motivation. But it is such good work that we wanted to make sure that we did the best we could to get this methodology in its purest form out to as many people on the planet that wanted it. So, you know, when it began to become popular, Merlin, you know, I know Merlin, and, you know, we had fun together, and, you know, he went to the same college I went to in Florida, you know, a generation later. Yeah, that was just intriguing. You know, I had no idea how much the world would pick up on this. I just needed to write the book because, you know, after 20 years of thousands of hours of doing this work and finding out that it nobody else seemed to have come up with a similar model, and it was bulletproof, and it, you know, produced the results of clarity, focus, space inside of people's head, no matter what. I said, okay, I guess I better write the book. So, you know, I had high anticipation, but no expectations as to how much the world would pick up on this thing. So as it started to pick up on it slowly, steadily, and has been now for the last, golly, you know, first edition came out in 2001. So what's that, 18 years ago? Wow. Time flies. So, you know, over those last 18 years, it has just kept growing and going.
and more people are running across it in interesting ways. So anyway, kind of a long non-answer to your question.
Well, I mean, when that was happening, was there any element of like, oh, you used the word piracy earlier, which I don't think you meant that literally, but was there any element of like, oh, well, what do we do about this?
From early on, you can't copyright an idea. You can only copyright your expression of it. So we just, early on, we started to realize we had some legal issues we needed to deal with, because if you actually don't do things in the U.S. anyway to protect your copyright or your brand, then anybody can run away with it and do whatever they want with it. So trademarking GTD and getting things done was just an important thing to do. And so when people started to do that, come on, David, there are over 300 apps that have been built purporting to support the GTD process. And so we just needed to make sure that people sort of gave credit where credit was due, and they didn't abuse essentially the copyrights, to that. They could then, as long as they met those kind of guidelines, they could do whatever they wanted. So that was, early on, we just had to build some sort of a guidelines and structures, about that. And 98% of the time, most people are highly cooperative. They go, oh, gee, I didn't know. Okay, I will change my website. I will change, how I'm expressing this or whatever. So people have been highly cooperative and quite nice about this, actually.
Yeah, there's like this whole cottage industry around GTD, especially with the apps. You said 300 apps. So when somebody makes an app and they purport to support GTD, I mean, in what ways do they have to comply to your standards?
Well, we just, when we find out about that, we just let them know. We just send them a set of guidelines about, hey, guys, come on, you can't use GTD without a trademark symbol. And, and I don't know, I'm not the legal beagle, on our team. So, Anne just sends a templated, thing. Oh, hey, here are our guidelines about this. We'd hope you would cooperate. And again, for the most part, they all do.
Very cool. Well, and you were saying that you didn't really have aspirations to build this huge empire. And I think that at this stage in your career, just about everybody who's listening would like to be in the position that you're in, which I think it's hard to argue that you have and will have a legacy, that this methodology may be taught for hundreds of years and will be the foundation of being productive and effective for people for a very long time. Don't be too modest. Do you agree with that?
And I do.
And how do you feel about that?
Oh, it's fabulous. Are you kidding? I've been graced by all the powers that be that to have run across something and uncovered something and formulated something that does no harm, to be Google-esque, that basically does nothing, but anybody, and you don't even have to implement the whole thing. You implement any of the GTD methodology and it will improve your condition, whatever it is. It'll give you more clarity, more space, more freedom, more control, in your life. And so, God, how cool is that? Not only that, the people most attracted to this, that have become the network in my world are the people who need it the least. They're already the most productive, aspirational, positively focused, people you'd ever meet. And it's kind of a strange paradox. The people who need it the least are the most attracted to it, because I think, you have to already know that systematizing your world is important. People never had a system before. They're not going to be attracted to this. It's going to look too hard. But people who've already had a system, but their life is now, they've over-created themselves in terms of what their own personal systems can manage, are the most attracted to this. So that's a cool bunch of folks.
Well, in a way, we have systems in our life, whether we're aware of it or not.
Sure. Well, if you were disorganized, you couldn't get out of bed. So, everybody's got their own system. You're right.
I mean, we agree upon what time it is across the globe. So that's a system that wasn't around forever. And I feel like you've created a new system of this idea of contexts that can be built upon.
Well, anybody who keeps a calendar or a schedule or a diary has already admitted that their head is not the best place to hold commitments and reminders of those things. You know, cognitive science has now basically proven, you know, in the last 10 or 15 years, that your head can't hang on to more than about four things, you know, and manage relationships between those. And so, you know, your head's for having ideas, but not for holding them. So the fact, if anybody listening to this has a calendar, you already know that your head, well, you know what, throw your calendar away. If you don't like lists, if you don't like to keep track of all your other commitments, errands you need to run, things you need to talk to your life partner about, things you need to bring up at the board meeting, things you need to, you know, sit down and draft at your computer, websites you need to surf to get, you know, yada, yada, yada. You know, come on. Most people have about 100 to 100, 100 to 200 actual next actions that represent things they need to do about commitments they've already made. So, you know, don't get mad at me for your lists. You know, those are your lists, not mine. So all I did was say, look, get them out of your head, because your head's just a crappy office. And so, you know, building the external brain so that it really manages things, you know, like your calendar does. I mean, that's a version of the external brain. Or putting a Post-it on the fridge, you know, for the groceries you need to get, whoever's going to the store next. You know, the same thing. Just, I need an external reminder because my head just needs to be freed up to do better things. It needs to make decisions about which errands to run, not try to remember the errands I need to run. Big difference.
Well, and using this example of groceries on a refrigerator, that I suppose it relies upon some sort of trigger as well.
Sure. Well, right? You need to see it put in front of your face, right? Or somebody's going to the store, they need to, you know, the system needs to include the behavior, not just that you've written it down, but that somebody's going to look at it at the right time.
Including the behavior of before you go to the store, always check this list. Yeah. On the refrigerator, and making that a part of it. Back to legacy. So I think that this is something that drives and motivates a lot of people, and it's something that I personally struggle with how to approach it. But I think that some people, they strive to have a legacy. Was that ever intentional for you in building a legacy in terms of deciding what to do and what not to do? Like, oh, how am I going to be remembered?
No, never in thought in my mind. I just did what I was doing, trying to make a living, you know, doing stuff that was cool and help people around me and, you know, could afford my lifestyle. That's really all it was.
Was that ever an idea that people presented to you and you made a conscious decision to reject the idea of going after a legacy?
Not really. I mean, let me give another spin on this. Early on, when I began to explore this methodology, I realized, at least from my own personal experience, from my own, you know, spiritual focus and so forth, in terms of why we're on the planet, what we're here to do, was that essentially, I'd gotten a hold of something that seemed to be very fundamental to our experience here: completion and creativity. You know, you need to complete the things that you have put in motion, be accountable for them, you know, and you need to be accountable for where you put your creative energy, because you can't stop. You're creating all the time. So I just uncovered something that had a lot to do with recognizing the open loops of the things that you have put in motion, that you then need to be accountable to either complete or renegotiate or dump or do something with, appropriately engage with. And you also then need to, you know, focus on the things that are most meaningful to you, you know, based upon the levels of commitment that you have, that can get pretty subtle. Why are you on the planet? What is your idea of wild success in terms of where you want to be? What are the things you need to accomplish over the next, you know, 2 or 3 years to make that happen? What are all the things you need to maintain, like your health and your vitality and your relationships and your fun factor and, you know, and your finances? And then what are all the projects you need to do about any of that? And then what are all the action steps you need to take? I couldn't get it any simpler than this, David. So, but what I did was I boiled it down to as simple as you could get it. And that it is that everyone is engaged in it, consciously or not.
Mm-hmm.
And so the fact that, you know, the world might recognize that this was something, you know, a lot of people run across this and say, God, there's something here that's just really unique, and they can't even put their finger on it. you know, because it is a very fundamental thing. There's no, you know, this methodology has no bias. There's no personality bias, gender bias, culture bias, anything.
Yeah, I agree with this being something that affects you in a very almost deeper, almost spiritual way. In that, and this sounds probably will sound ridiculous to a lot of people. I read the Getting Things Done book the same way I think some people study religious texts. I'll go to a coffee shop on a Sunday morning and I'll sit down and I'll review, you know, because it takes a while to get. I don't know if you ever master this system.
It's a lifelong art and craft.
Yeah.
It's much like, you know, can you ever complete learning the flute? Can you ever complete learning the tango? Can you ever complete mm-hmm. learning how to cook? Can you ever complete learning how to parent? No, it's a lifelong, lifetime thing about how do you manage the flow of life's work and commitments. So mm-hmm. you can always get better and better at it. Me too. I read the book and I go, God, that's really good. Oh, I wrote that. Oh, God, I should really do that.
I feel light and free when I review the book. Mm-hmm. And I guess I still am thinking about this idea of legacy because I don't want to badmouth anybody, but it's something that people talk about a lot. And it's one of these things where I thought about it. And it made me think like, oh, legacy. Okay. So when I'm dead, I'm still going to be insecure. I need to be remembered. It seems to me that if someone were to intentionally try to build a legacy, that it would discourage the very behavior that would lead to a legacy being built.
Oh, yeah, I think that's really true. I mean, let's take a simple thing like being innovative. Nobody ever went out to be innovative, created anything innovative. Right? Hey, I'm going to go be innovative. Okay, go. What do I do? Innovation really happens when somebody just comes up with some technique or some tool or some thing that solves something that nobody else was able to solve in the way they did it. So they didn't go out to be innovative. They went out to handle a problem or solve us, you know, or produce a value of some sort.
Yeah, that resonates with me because I guess I have this belief that we go through our lives and we have experiences and maybe we have a few inherent traits and really the process of creation is just being open to the way that those things interact with each other and bringing that out into the world.
Sure.
Is that the way that you think about it?
It is. And you know, it's really about just, okay, what's got my attention right now? What do I need to do? And you know, how do I need to do that? And I think, you know, it's a constant. I'm still my own student here. I have to do this thing. I have to sit down and say, oh God, you know, I hate to have to do. Okay, let me sit down and do that. And then I wind up writing something that was actually pretty cool and come up with some ideas I didn't know I had. You go, whoa, okay, well, that's cool. So I think it's just throwing ourselves into the environment and engaging. You know, it's like, you know, the old, the movie, you know, with the fighter pilots, you know, you know, Maverick, engage, engage, you know, Maverick, engage, engage, you know, because you can get really hung up. So as long as you engage and then stay focused and then course correct, you know, as you get information, I think that's all I've done. So that I don't think there's any further coaching than that.
Well, and as you were experiencing this incredible success, when things were really taking off, did that ever, you know, present some challenges in terms of remaining grounded and remaining open to reality, and not letting your ego, to pull you in the wrong direction?
Well, David, to be honest, you know, we've never really, the ship has never really come in yet in terms of that. I mean, fame and fortune are not necessarily tied together, you know, so, you know, trying to build a business model, you know, for this that worked so that could be sustainable and, you know, could sustain, you know, mine and my wife's lifestyle, you know, it has been a consistent sort of challenge and opportunity. So it was never like, wow, I suddenly made a gazillion dollars. I don't need to do anything. Not at all. And so, you know, trying to build a company that would then scale this, you know, was really tough. You know, we were up to like 50 people at one time and, you know, barely hanging on to try to make that work, you know, because this is subtle stuff. And, you know, GTD is for anybody, but it's not for everybody. So trying to market what this was. I see we solve a problem most people actually don't admit or realize they actually have. So, you know, that's a that's a marketing issue. You know, so trying to figure out how to describe what this is, how to sell it, how to get people aware of it, whatever, has been an ongoing challenge for the last 30 years. So that's never really stopped. You know, it's getting to the point now where, you know, we were able to sort of shrink and expand. We were able to, but, you know, our strategy was to actually find the great partners that knew better than us how to market, distribute, deliver this stuff than us in terms of their, you know, their expertise. So we've now, that's then the last 5 years, we've now done that. So we've shrunk from 50 people to 8. Because we're now basically an IP licensing company. And so a lot of my work now is just supporting our franchisees and licensees around the world, which is fun. You know, next week I'll be in 10 days, you know, going to South Africa and to Cape Town for a week because we have a new partner there is doing great work, just getting traction and starting to do stuff. So I'll be doing interviews and keynote lunches and things like that, as well as nice wine tours, you know, in Cape Town. And so that's a lot of what I'm doing now is helping support the partners who we've built the business to help just, you know, manage that. So that, you know, that's been a long time coming. So believe me, you know, we're still, you know, figuring out how to make that work. So my wife and I are still working full time.
I mean, I think that's a good reminder for anybody trying to create something is that even with something that from the outside, it seems like just sort of caught on like wildfire, like GTD, that it was still a ton of work to scale it to the point that you have. But wasn't there some moment or point where you came to a realization like, hey, this thing is really catching on, is really striking a nerve in people that I never expected. And wow, I created this.
I suppose in random reflective moments, I've had those fleeting thoughts. You know, and oftentimes I have to remind myself, hey, David, you're okay. You know, you've done good work. And so, you know, I guess I'm still a victim of the Protestant ethic that if you're not feeling like at least slightly guilty about how much harder you should be working than you are, you're going to hell. So, you know, I still probably have a little bit of that DNA, you know, in my system.
Well, and did that never threat to, I guess, pull you off track to the point where you're saying to yourself, hey, I'm David Allen. I created this GTD thing and I know what's best and I'm going to build a legacy and then result in causing yourself to make decisions that would hinder your ability to build a legacy?
No, I have to admit, I've never had any of those kind of thoughts.
Well, that's great.
Really, I guess maybe this is an ego statement, but I'm you know, one of the more humble people you will meet in terms of like, I just feel like I've been graced to have this thing and just trying to do my best with it and still working at that.
Was there a particular moment when you did realize that, oh, this is really striking a nerve in millions of people?
You know, probably the major milestone, David, was when I first published Getting Things Done. I wasn't sure that I could make this methodology virtual. In other words, I knew that if I could sit down with somebody for 2 days, they could get it because I could share it with them. I could demonstrate it. I could show them, you know, and I really wasn't sure that we could scale this in any way virtually, you know, without me having to be there personally to sort of share what this was. And so the first weekend that the book was published in 2001, and I got an email from a woman, she said, David, I just bought your book at Barnes & Noble and I spent the weekend implementing it. Oh my God, this has changed my life. I went, oh my God. So that was really a defining moment, was realizing that we actually could scale this, that people could get the value out of this in some virtual form. And that was actually fairly recent that I actually had that idea. And then, you know, my wife and I had to decide, well, do I just keep this as some sort of a boutique? You know, I could be on the speaking circuit. I could do that if the book was becoming a bestseller. Or should, you know, the world is knocking on our door. Do we try to figure out some way to scale this, you know, in a way And that was the decision we made, was, okay, we need to do that. But the only way you could do that is by technology and partnerships. So that was, Kelly, that's got to be, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we sort of made that decision. And it's been, you know, a pretty hard row to hoe to try to figure out how to do that and make that work and make it sustainable and take it to where it is now.
So that one email was the moment when you felt confident that this was going to scale.
Yeah. And that, you know, it wasn't even in my mind that we could scale globally. Early on, we had some people just were great, you know, champions of my stuff and friends in the UK and also in Brazil. And they asked us, hey, can we license this? Can we partner with you to do this? And we didn't really know how to do that. Again, bigger gum than we knew how to chew. And, you know, the legal issues, all the issues that you have to deal with if you're trying to take something, especially some intellectual property, you know, global, we just didn't know how to do that. So we fumbled around with a few of those kind of things and they didn't really work. And then about 5 years ago, you know, some folks came to us that were really good at this and they said, hey, let us partner with you because we know how to do it. They were the guys that had built the Franklin Covey network around the world. And, you know, they had jumped ship from Franklin Covey and they had created their own IP licensing business and they were looking for boutique IP that wasn't global yet, that they could then take their expertise that they'd built, you know, in building a global, you know, network from the Seven Habits. How could they take that and then and use that? So we've now partnered with them for 5 years. So they're the people who really knew how to do this and then took us into the international world, using their network and their connections and also their expertise and how to build sort of these global, you know, licensees. So it came to us, you know, we were open for it and we, you know, we were open to and make those kind of things work. But, you know, it was just kind of good graces of the universe.
It sounds like a very fortuitous partnership.
Yeah, it was. And then, you know, and then we still were managing the US and Canada and you know, they had all the licensees they were doing outside of where we were located. And then a couple of years ago we said, golly, you know, there are probably people in the US that could do this better than we can. And so we ran across a company called Vital Smarts. And long story short, we wound up creating a great relationship with them. You know, they manage the Crucial Conversations, seminars and whatever. And they, you know, fabulous business model, fabulous people, you know. And so we were able to then partner with them so that allowed us to let go of the necessity to market, distribute, deliver, you know, the work, you know, hands on kind of in the US and Canada. So now with them as a partner, you know, so that's why we've kind of covered the globe now.
So besides that one email, were there any other milestones or inflection points when you realized that, oh, this is getting big?
Not any one particular one, but when certain people started to become champions of this stuff. Come on, one of my biggest champions is Howard Stern. You know, we coached Howard and he wound up hiring our coach as his COO. She's still there. You know, Howard then broadcast this to, you know, all of his, you know, radio listening audience for 6 months. He said, oh my God, you know, this has changed my life. And he would tell you. So sometimes, you know, and, you know, people like, you know, Will Smith and Robert Downey Jr., champions of my stuff. And, you know, they mentioned this in many, many different ways. So, you know, when you get kind of people like that, and also many of the people that I get to work with one-on-one are just the best and brightest people on the planet you'd ever meet. And when this sticks with them, you know, and nothing else did, you know, pretty much bet. I said, well, you know, you can't punch a hole in this. And so not a matter of whether, it's just a matter of when somebody gets this.
Mm-hmm. Did you do anything to make that Howard Stern or Will Smith connection happen?
No.
Or did anybody on your team, you know?
No. Publicist? Well, we just took advantage of it when Howard called our office and said, hey, you know, can you guys do this? And so we said, oh, absolutely sure.
Do you know how he discovered the book himself?
I think he ran it. Yeah, I'm not sure how he ran across it initially. And then he hired somebody who was kind of one of those pirates, essentially in New York, that said they were doing GTD and they were, you know, pretty amateurish about that. So he said, well, let me go find the source. And so that's he came to our office or, you know, contacted us. So we're mutual fanboys. We were able to get together and, you know, we've been together two or three times. And, you know, Howard's an incredible guy. He's totally sensitive, totally smart, you know, very, very cool.
And so those kind of connections just happen, you know, all over. Well, if we can loop back around to the GTD summit, you'll see who's on the list. You know, the presenters that have been willing to, on their own dime, just show up and you know, be a presenter, and, you know, and for this global summit we're doing in June.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Marshall Goldsmith, Dan Pink, Charles Duhigg, wow. You know, there's all kinds of cool folks. You know, that are every one of them is a friend of mine, and I could spend a whole day with just them. You know, that's going to be my biggest challenge, is because I've got about 45 of them right now that have, you know, just you know, Katie Coleman, who we coached while she's in, you know, one of the first female astronauts. You know, so we coached her while she was on the space station, and you know, so and she's got a great story to tell about GTD and how that's affected her life. So. You know, wow, that keeps, you know, they keep on coming in terms of the people that run across this that you know, has affected them and they're, you know, great spokespeople.
And the book came out in 2001. It's interesting that GTD, or as you said on our previous conversation, this stuck with me, control is the ultimate addiction. Or the master addiction, I believe, is what you said.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your relationship with control?
People try to control the universe because they want it to be kind of the way they want it to be, as opposed to acceptance of the way things are. Mm. So, you know, my screensaver just says, let go. You know, because anytime you try to hold on to something too tight, it's not going to work. So being open and vulnerable, I think, is you know, probably the greatest state of mind to be in, so that you're present. So I think a lot of people, for instance, keep things in their head as a false sense of control. You know, that's why people don't write things down. People think, oh, you mean I have to keep track of everything that I've got committed to? I said, no, it's up to you. Your head's a crappy office. But, you know, if you're trying to control it by keeping it in your head, good luck. So that there's a lot of ways that you could you know, skin this cat.
It's ironic because you can imagine somebody saying that a GTD practitioner is a control freak,
mm-hmm.
and it might be the opposite.
Yeah, I use the term of that when we talk about control, we talk about in control, not control like control the weather, control your kids, control your boss. Good luck. I'm talking about having something under control. Like your car as you're driving it, or a meeting mm-hmm. as you're running it. And under control is a very real thing that you can get better at and do. And that's not a negative thing. Having something under control just means you've got it stable enough so that you're not, you know, concerned or distracted by having a thing go off the rails.
Well, to extend the car metaphor, if you were driving on an icy road, you aren't controlling every little thing that your car does, but you're in control. And part of being in control is being open to the way that your car is going to interact with this icy road.
Exactly. Well, come on, riding a bicycle, very simple example. You know, if you just hang on without letting yourself course correct, you know, you're going to fall over. You know, so you're constantly course correcting. So being open and having something under control means you're open and flexible and then constantly, as you say, responding to the environment that you're in.
It goes back to the appropriate engagement
mm-hmm.
that you were talking about previously, that engaging appropriately with, say, your someday maybe list. Okay, so you have everything on a list, and one of those lists is, say, a someday maybe list. That's an appropriate engagement. That is being in control of your mind in a way such that you are allowing for the fact that there are things that you think about that you might do someday, but that you aren't sure.
Sure. Well, you know, a lot of what was drove my definition of the GTD methodology was, how do you get things off your mind and you don't have to finish them, but you do have to appropriately engage with them. So to your point, if you said, I might want to do that, I don't want to forget the idea, but I'm not committed to move on it right now. Fabulous. Park that where those things go and then look at them as often as you think you need to look at them. You just need to feel okay about what you're not doing. Mm-hmm. Right. But you need to know what you're not doing before you can feel okay with it. So that was a whole lot of what this was about, was just getting down to the mundaneness, essentially, of keeping track of all your commitments at the multiple levels you have them, and then engaging with them appropriately. See, you and I can only do one thing at a time consciously. I mean, we're doing all, you're pumping blood and breathing and doing all kinds of multitasking of things that are just unconscious. But in terms of your focused attention, you can only focus on one thing at a time. You just need to. So the whole idea is, are you comfortable, David, that talking to me right now is exactly what you need to do, given all your commitments on the planet, you know, and me, the same thing, you know, or are we feeling terrible about all the other stuff we could, should be doing right now, as opposed to talking to each other? So, you know, that's why when I'm not doing anything else, I'm cleaning up my backlog and capturing and clarifying and organizing all of those things so that whatever I'm doing, I'm fully present doing it. That's appropriate engagement.
And I mean, to look at this again through this lens of this idea that putting things on lists or putting things in your system is actually a way of letting go of control. I think that, I guess, part of the reason why some people might resist putting so many things on in various places and lists is because they think that by writing it down, they've somehow made a commitment to act upon it, when actually the letting go is the opposite of that, is that you're letting go, you're letting it out of your head, and you're putting it in some place where you can be appropriately engaged with that thing.
Sure. You need to be able to look at all that stuff and go, no, I'm going to have a beer. I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to play with mm-hmm. the dog, you know, whatever. And then, or I can watch my girl play soccer without being on my iPhone. My God. So that's really all, in a sense, that's as simple as all this is. It's just, mm-hmm. it's only as simple as your life is simple. And most people have a much more complex, you know, life than they realize. They actually start to sit down and catalog, you know, all the things they're committed to. So
last time I talked to you, you said that you don't even have an assistant. Is that true? Still?
Yeah. I manage my own calendar. I manage all my own stuff. I have for years.
That's amazing to me. And so how have you thought about that?
Yeah. It's not against assistance. It's just the given, you know, I'm a freedom kind of guy. So don't tie me down to anybody that I have to depend on for other mm-hmm. kinds of things. So that's just my own personal stuff. That's not necessarily the most productive way to do it. I suppose there've been times when I've had people that certainly assist me, and my wife and I assist each other, you know, for sure. You know, split jobs at home, you know, in terms of what we do.
Well, it's funny because I think a lot of people think that to be productive, they have to have an assistant. I know I've worked with assistants in the past, and it's been nice sometimes, but also there's this the idea of control sometimes, like, they didn't do this right, or, you know, and sometimes it feels like, it's easier to I'm happier if I just do these things myself, and maybe I don't need that in order to scale.
Sure. And, you know, come on, a lot of it depends on what you're actually trying to do. I mean, I need all the help I can get. I just get them through different ways, you know, essentially. And the nature of my life and the nature of my work does not require to have somebody else, you know, manage any of that.
Well, it seems that the way that you are scaling is that you've created a structure through which individuals with their own sense of agency can, you know, operate under their own motivation and spread this meme.
Right. Exactly. Well, I was on the phone, you know, for 45 minutes just before you and I talked with my partner in South Africa, because he was wondering, you know, he's creating a brochure for some of the keynote stuff that we're going to do for luncheons and so forth when I'm there in Cape Town. And so, yeah, so in a way, he's more of a colleague and a partner than an assistant, but it's the same sort of thing.
And was it difficult at all to recognize? Because it's interesting that in a way, GTD has scaled so well because you have you've given up control.
Yeah, I had to let it go in terms of, you know, as soon as I started to train trainers to deliver this. It was just totally agonizing to watch them fumble through this until they got really good at it. And so, you know, I basically said, look, go do this as best you can. And as long as a client wants you back, you're on, you know, that, because I'm not the best player for the play. I don't have the patience to either manage people or train people or whatever. That's not what I'm really good at. So learning how to let go and say, hey, whatever they do, as long as something, you know, as long as it doesn't create harm somewhere, couldn't hurt. And we'll see. So yeah, so there's been a constant sense of, in a sense, letting go of, you know, I in the early days, I wouldn't do anything less than a full 2-day seminar by myself to figure, because I didn't want to give people just a part of what this methodology was. The whole is much greater than the sum of the parts. And so I didn't want to denigrate this thing unless I could really give people the whole game. And so for years, I gave these seminars and people would walk out hypnotized and think it was fabulous and then not do anything with it because it was just overwhelming. There's just too much stuff for them to integrate in terms of habit change and understanding all that. So learning how to let go and pay much more attention and credit people who are much better at instructional design and habit change and behavior change, and let them take the reins for how do we then transfer this education appropriately. I'm still doing that.
Yes. So pretty much the only way to learn GTD at that point was either to work directly with you or to go to one of your 2-hour seminars.
2 days, not 2 hours.
Oh, sorry, 2 days.
Yeah.
Two days seminars, 2 hours, that would be very quick. 2-day seminars. But then beyond that, it was difficult for them to maintain.
And even that would just give you the cognitive framework. It wouldn't actually have you implement it. That's why, mm-hmm. you know, our initial sort of coaching programs were 2 days, one-on-one, desk side. Because as I say, it kind of takes you, you know, maybe 2 minutes to understand the model. It takes you 2 days to actually start to implement it if you were actually going to do that, and about 2 years to make it habitual if you really stick with it.
And about 20 years to master.
You know.
If that.
Yeah, if that.
Huh, okay. So I assume that there was some value that came out of having that level of control over the whole system, but there must have, maybe you held on to it a little bit longer than you would if you could go back and revise history.
You know, it's all perfect. Everything got me to where I am right now, which is wonderful. So you can't denigrate any of the rungs of the ladder. So, you know,
sure.
And it was sort of fumbling through and trying to put one foot in front of the other. I didn't really have a grand scheme other than, you know, what we've talked about before, you know, and so trying to just figure that out as I moved along and, you know, charged enough money for my time that I could still afford my lifestyle. So, you know, that's kind of how it grew.
Well, from an outside perspective, you've got a wonderful legacy. You've built this huge global network. Seems like you're pretty successful. Is there, you know, a younger version of David Allen who was very worried about whether things were going to work out and that would be very happy to see where things are now?
You mean in terms of in my own memory and my own, you know, history?
Yeah, if you could speak to, you know, your 20-year-old self or 25-year-old self, would that person be surprised at what you had to say or relieved?
Maybe it would. Yeah. I've tended to approach my life, you know, after all my personal growth training and self-development training or whatever in the 60s and 70s. And 80s, you know, and back then, I mean, I just learned to sort of live my life with high anticipation and no expectation. So, you know, I don't like to frustrate myself or disappoint myself. So, you know, I've tended to have that as a general sort of lifestyle approach. And so that's kept me pretty healthy. And, you know, it's a nice way to live.
High anticipation, low expectation, is that what you have for this GTD summit?
It is.
Tell us more about that.
It is, absolutely. Well, no, it's like, who knows? What was the movie? Kevin Costner, you know, build it and they'll come. You know, so this is a version of, okay, well, let's throw the dart out there. Let's commit to a venue and let me see if anybody wants to play. And it turns out very early on, we got oversubscribed with people who wanted to present. You know, I kind of sent out invitations to my A-list and got all kinds of great responses for that. And already we're only, you know, a couple of weeks into promoting it, for June, and we're already 15% subscribed. So, you know, my co-producers here, who are really, really excellent guys, are going, oh my God, they've never seen anything quite like that. So looks like it's going to be quite successful. So we've got a venue that can hold, 1,200, 1,300 people. So that would be our, if we get 1,000, that would be fabulous. We already have, over 200 sort of signed up. So we'll see. But it's going to be, again, any one of these people that are going to present, we're going to have panels on education and healthcare and tech and finance and raising kids and families and relationships and so forth, and how this methodology has impacted, this incredible array of presenters, from around the world that'll be talking about this and how valuable it is. I've got Julie Flagg, she runs an OBGYN clinic in Connecticut, and she's going to talk about how GTD has saved lives, just given and prevented burnout, in the health industry. So things like that. I mean, so I'm thrilled. So it's kind of like, well, whoever comes, I'm going to have a great time.
So you don't have any preconceived notions about, who is this summit for?
Well, obviously we've put it out, our GTD newsletter goes to 65,000 people. So that, that's where certainly we've started to broadcast it. And, a lot of folks are signing up and wanting to do that. So a lot of people are coming because they are either already GTD champions. They already know this. They're already part of this network, part of our team. And there are also, a lot of people that have run across GTD that want to know more about what it is that this will be for as well. So pretty sophisticated, audience that's going to be there.
And this is taking place in Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam, my adopted city. Absolutely.
Great. Well, I guess everybody should go to this summit if they can. And any other places that you would like for people to get more of you?
No. Well, you can just check out gtdsummit.com. You'll see what's on the venue. You'll see what's on the program already. And you can sign up for the newsletter. You can go to gettingthingsdone.com, our website, and sign up for the newsletter. We'll be broadcasting, again, we've got 45 presenters. So we'll be sort of sharing, half a dozen at a time over the next couple of weeks, to let people see who's going to be there. So yeah,
right.
Come on in. It's a great place.
Well, David, it's as always, a huge pleasure to talk to you and an honor. So thanks again for coming on the show.
David, thanks for the invitation. Delighted to give me the voice to broadcast all this. It's wonderful. So good work.
Is Love Your Work helping you find your unique creative voice? Does it bring you the inspiration and motivation you need to become the creator and human you want to be? If so, please be a part of making this a special and nourishing and thoughtful show. Support the show on Patreon. You'll be an even bigger part of this show than you already are. If you contribute just a coffee a month, you'll be helping support the hosting and production of Love Your Work. Everyone has some unique creative gift to offer the world. Together, we can give people the tools they need to bring that work into the world. The world will be better off for it. Visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/cadavy. This is a different kind of model for supporting the work that you love. The choice is yours. Vote with your dollars, put your money where your mind is, and keep Love Your Work going. Visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/cadavy. As a thank you, you'll get early access, bonus content, and a discount on Love Your Work merchandise. Learn more at patreon.com/cadavy. That's patreon.com/KA, D as in David, A, V as in Victor, Y. And if you can't support the show financially, and you've listened to at least 3 episodes, can you do me a favor? Write a review on Apple Podcasts. You can consider it your donation to help support the show. Love Your Work is brought to you in part by our Patreon supporters, such as mini sponsors Roxana Maynard of Agility Alchemist at agilityalchemist.com and Paula Spriggs, and top supporters such as Jeffrey Mason and Vitas Pinkovicius. This has been Love Your Work, and I'm David Cadavy. The theme music for this show is At Sea by Durena from the album About Everything and More by arrangement with Deep Elm Records at deepelm.com. Love Your Work is a production of Cadavy, Inc.